Yo, what's going on, man?
Nothing. I'm working on something. Just leave me alone.
What are you working on, dude?
It's just this poetry thing. It's for my class. Actually, it's for this radio show.
What's it called, man?
It's called PMS.
PMS? What does it stand for? Paul's Magical Sword?
No, dude, no. Just get out of here. Let me work.
Penis made shortcake?
No, dude. Leave me alone.
Paul McCartney spinach?
Dude, seriously, just get out of here. I'm trying to focus on this.
What is it? Paula's mucus seepage? Patricia's massive shit?
No.
Pikachu's mystical spine?
Get the Paco's get out of here.
Monkey
get
slap?
Out of here right now.
Punk get music the, get, sucks?
No!
Oh
it's,
my god.
It's poetry music show. February 2011 with your host Phil Lysecki. This month's show is going to be a one-man show. Duda and Sneza are going to join us for the next show because I have lots of time to kill, and I'm going to have a few friends on here with a few poems, a few of mine, and just wish me luck because this is all me. PMS 2011. This is Phil Lysicki. This is called The Family Hit, Part 1. They say it was 30 years ago, but who would ever know? They say somebody got chinked 25 times or so, but who would ever know? They say you can see the family in a neon glow, but who would ever know? They say all these rumors, a never-ending garbage flow. Forget them, let's just go. Put on your wrinkly masks, covered in beads of old sweat. A children's game. Now put on your yellow dry gloves to cover it all up. The smell of old meat and dishes. Now the long, straight walk down the block, over those tracks, hoping to God there's not a train on its way to signal the panic army into firing at you against the wall. Good, you're across the street. Memories of being that child and finding yourself in these innocent yet chaotic situations of harmless and yet harmful games. Or are they? Let's just keep playing. Shatter that 1960s oozing aged glass. Antiques stand in the way of our adventure. No family, no shank, and no neon glow, just rocking chairs and vintage suitcases caked in the pixie dust of passing time. Like the baby powder that settles into every wrinkle of an elderly person waiting for their big break. Let's hope that it's a gentle infant bottom fall into the hole of hell. Oh, but it's not just over yet. As we dance and prance through this blood trail trance, splattered across every wall on the first floor. Don't lose your rep by missing a step as you land into the sharp springs of a torn up couch while feathers explode into every direction. A Rip Taylor finale. This really is the finale, isn't it? What is there to do for a man-child in such a place? All windows broken, the drywall is cracked and seething out onto the floor, forming this asthma pool trap of asbestos. The flesh-colored stockings reminding me of a gluttonous circus dream, while it rains this deceiving pink cotton candy through this house of only two clowns. This really must be the end. The knives are gone, the cleavers have swam away into Ziploc bags marked as Exhibit B, or maybe hibernating in the soil. No one needs to know. Well, I've had enough of this. No aerosol cans to spray, all windows broken outward resembling a beautiful Timothy McVeigh-esque dream, and I could only wish I could know what happened. At least I should know the true scent of history in this 1960-era abandoned Americana tree. The only scent is that of rotting vagrants, greased up clothes, and the remnants of their alcohol aids. Let's dance one more time this time, see where the trail really leads.
Yeah. My name is Brad Iben. This is Glass Half Empty. The turquoise hue of the light shining through my stained glass window is blinding. As I sit at my desk trying to wring so much as a goddamn phrase out of my overextended mind, it occurs to me that writing doesn't come as easily as it once did. I suppose I had more to write about when I wasn't so disgusted with myself. My index finger traces the tip of the scotch glass. I ambivalently watch the vacuum that pulls the whiskey to the walls of the tumbler with the inertia of a tornado. My phone rings. I walk over the bar and grab the dangerously close to empty bottle of Black Label. I take a pull, wait 6 rings, hope to hang up, and answer. Yep. Sonny, it's your old man. I'm in Chicago for the weekend. And? I need a lift from the airport. Spare the pleasantries, Pop. Ever heard of a fucking taxi? Don't be a smart ass. I haven't heard from you in 7 years, and all you have for me is a demand and a criticism. Good to see you haven't changed a goddamn bit. Come on, kiddo. You know, I don't have a way with words like you do. I'm only in town for 1 weekend, and I have something important to tell you. What is it this time? Is it asking too much to see my only son in person? Are you too much of a hotshot writer to make time for your own father? I'm kind of busy at the moment. Busy doing what? Diving to the bottom of a bottle and writing those precious little words of yours? That's exactly it, Dad. For 7 years, I've been permeating the perfect phrase to express all the loathing, anger, and disgust I've felt. And? Get in a fucking taxi. I'll pay the fare. The bottle clinks the thin rim of the glass, making a hollow noise that echoes through my office. I listen to the sound waves ricochet off the wood-grain walls and realize how empty this home truly is. The glass fills with hazel brown poison. I watch it slowly rise, like a scientist carefully calculating the meniscus in his graduated cylinder. The alcohol is my life force. It keeps my mind afloat while simultaneously letting my body drown. I pick up the tumbler and walk back to my desk. The blank white sheet in my Smith Corona is staring me coldly in the eyes with the look I am all too familiar of. The page is a black hole, sucking my thoughts dry before they become fruitful enough to string a sentence together. My eyes wander to the assorted shit that covers my desk. A few sculptures I made in sophomore ceramics class back at Lake Forest. A few notebooks which are all about a quarter full. A couple of assorted pens, pencils, and markers. 2 empty bottles of Black Label. 4 2-milligram Klonopins. A little more than an eighth of what some cocksucker told me was Jack Herrera, but smokes more like some mid-grade Guatemalan brickweed. And a pack of zigzags. The desk of a writer should be full of artifacts that make the words leap from the subconscious. The drive to put pen to paper or punch a typewriter isn't a calculated, intellectual display of one's ability. It's collateral damage from the suffering we're born with, grow into, and are destined to prove with our miserable existence. My writing desk, my own microcosm of this empty, morally bankrupt cesspool of a life I've grown accustomed to, does nothing to cultivate and bring into consciousness the sublime and the beautiful. At least this way I can slip into what I know. Being a man thrown overboard, screaming for dear life, as whiskey fills his lungs and death enters his soul. No one can hear the shrieks of death, and no one cares to. The fuzz from the needle on my record player is buzzing through my skull. I flip over Layla and other assorted love songs, and Little Wings starts to play. Sitting atop the chestnut cabinet which holds my record player, amplifier, and sub-amplifier is a picture of my middle school graduation. I'm standing in the middle of the picture with an arm around both my mother and my father. My father has his arm draped around my neck and his other hand snugly secured on Miss Carpenter's waist. I didn't find out the reason why Amelia Carpenter and I had play dates every Wednesday night until Amelia and I walked in on a blindfold of Mrs. Carpenter, tied to her marital bed, while my father balls deep inside the woman who, prior to this occurrence, I only knew as our friendly class mother who brought sprinkled cupcakes every Friday. I used to look up to my father. He told me about the sanctity of marriage, and that romance is what makes life worth living. If romance is abandoning your wife and 3 children 4 times a week to stick your dick in any middle-aged whore of a housewife who's sick of their husband who makes 6 figures a year yet still won't buy a bottle of Viagra and fuck her right, then the path my life has taken shouldn't come as much of a surprise. I chug down what's left of the whiskey in my glass. I don't know what I'm going to say to him. What can I say? Thank you for turning me into the cynical, cold, detached, successful piece of trash that I am today. And what important piece of information could he possibly have for me? An apology? Over his dead fucking body. I pour the rest of the scotch into the tumbler and inhale it in an instant. A surge of anger overcomes my senses. My head is throbbing in pain and my hands are convulsing. Stumbling back to my desk, I grab two Klonopins, tilt my head back, swallow them dry. Nothing. I stare at the empty glass, spinning it back and forth, watching the final drop of sediment cling to the shallow walls. I shut my eyes and whip the glass with the might of Hercules. The sound of shattering glass is soothing. A smashed picture of my first book signing lies on the floor. The broken glass spirals out like a spider web, distorting and dulling the grandiose display of some sort of accomplishment. I'm flashing a toothy smile. In my left hand is a copy of my first novel. In the right is the throat-slitting hand of my agent. All the while, some blonde number, model type, huge tits resting on my shoulder, his arms wrapped around my neck and his kissing my cheek. The beautifully deceiving aspect of pictures is that they capture the briefest moment in time. The anguish, the sorrow, the infidelity, the pain, the anxiety, the depression, and every other terrifyingly dominant sensation that crosses one's consciousness can be flawlessly masked by an ambivalent disguise. People love fiction. It's easy to read about the hardships of others and be glad that we're not those poor, impotent, despondent, quadriplegic, emotionally crippled bastards. Just as Hemingway took sadistic pleasure in watching the bulls tear their jagged horns from left to right into the horses and watch them wither away their final seconds of existence in pain and agony, so does the general public fawn over the terribly dysfunctional relationships that encapsulate our lives. My life has become a piece of fiction itself, and the well has run dry. I have become the pathetic, self-loathing, cheating bastard that I mocked. No longer am I characterizing the terrible effects of an absent, unfaithful, narcissistic husband. I've peeled away the layers of my own pathetic existence, leaving nothing but the bare sack of blood and bones that's left. I look at the picture in my stereo cabinet of Victoria, Scott, and myself, huddling for warmth, smiling in the fleeting snow and shining sun on Lakeshore Drive, and realize that I would have left too, if I could. I take my typewriter and toss it through the window, over the balcony, and hear it crash to the pavement. Screams and horror of agony rise from the street like the beautiful tones of Beethoven's Moonlight Sonata. I step through the broken glass to the edge of the balcony and see a corpse, lying perfectly still in a growing pool of thick maroon blood, surrounded by a circle of nosy, curious scum. My father's eyes are staring through me like a broken pane of glass. His lips don't move, but I can hear him speak. I walk back into my apartment and sit at my desk. The words finally flow from pen to paper as death seamlessly blends into life.
Phil Lysicki again. This is the Family Hit Part 2. That depressing moment of a puzzled little kid when one falls and the tears begin to form for no apparent reason. When the snowball warrior slips on ice. When the 4-year-old Evel Knievel falls and feels his first road rash. When the inbred hillbilly's first gunshot cracks him right in the crease of his skull. And right in front of the girls. Well, I fell and slipped both hands open on this window of opportunity. This new trail. There it was. The 2-car garage that beamed at me more than that rumor of neon bodies. Let's go in. 2 1970s Cadillacs. A broken-down desk. Empty rusty shelves. And a broken-down bench. Open up the trunk, open up the door, and out comes the steaming roadkill stench. No animals, no bones, not even some excrement. Stains of fleshy red and oil spills across this canvas cement. But then, right before my fellow comrade was about to launch a gallon of liquid disgust, I see a bright red light in the corner of this industrial La Cosa Nostra mess. At least the Cadillac shark could have darted through the dark. The keys didn't feed its rotting stomach, so it remained in park. And then, a chalk-white fridge plugged in, running that bitter Chicago cold, frost twirling into this hot summer air like the souls of Medusa's snakes, floating to freedom. 4 other fridges boxed up, neglected, and not even used. But what kind of attention could this lone one possibly have gotten? We are Indiana Jones, opening this lost fridge casket, and what treasure is there? 3 paper food bags covered in random strands of hair. Reach into the first one to the tune of traffic flutes, nothing but a pair of dreadful smelling boots. I then moved onto the second saggy bag of wonders, but unfortunately this one had nothing. Not even a magical bunny rabbit with those wiry, broken ears and crossed eyes. The third one, on the other hand, my yellow rubber hand creeped into this bag, reminding me of the way dogs creep on, in, to attack a squirrel. This time, in this psychological inkblot test of pure darkness and the sparkling white gleaming of blindness, I couldn't make out this shape to be anything. My hands performed a full-body massage to what felt like old, hard pizza slices, gathered together in a random fashion, sticking in and out of each other. A marinara acupuncture disaster, and covered in what felt like fresh spilt custard. I took a deep breath because the paranoia traveled through my skeleton, just in and out, like those creepy breezes that tiptoe across your spine while you are shivering and scrambling to get home on your walk off the L on a cold rainy night. I pull out my cell phone, the only source of light or life in this marvelous mystery murder scene, and I make a severely deep observation at what my shaky grip is grasping, slithering, and struggling to hold, like in a Stallone flick about mountain climbing. Suddenly I feel one of those ghosts tightening their grip across me, and then something grows inside my throat, as though I swallowed the pride of these pitiful few spirits. My companion, on the other hand, already imitating the old faithful geyser through his mouth, since he obviously has swallowed too much of this haunting. So what did I see, you say? Well, it sure did not look like it was from this world. A ball of mucus with random strands of skin and hair roots sticking from every direction, as if humans were made of wax rather than skin, and just rolled down a blistering volcano, melting into a nightmare ball with each sizzle bounce every 5 feet upon this orange volcanic glass. Well, by the end of this adventure, we as companions had the same thought being shot bullet speed through our mind. Something very bad happened here, and we didn't belong here. Although, as all men with little boys screaming inside them, we still needed to leave with a bang of victory, as our adventure had been concluded in a very harmonious way. Windshields exploded, fire extinguishers caked the premises as though a monstrous man of chalk had ejaculated on all of us. And of course, blood, hair, balls of mucus, shards of rusted doors, and magic wands of rebar had flown and galloped in every direction. This was the end of our adventure. And with tears of happiness in our eyes, we walked home following the sunset, puffing and coughing the cheapest tobacco cigars we could buy, just enough cancer cells to drape the stench of a Valentine's Day massacre, riding over who knows how many years. Oh, and of course, you didn't think this adventure would end without an encore. As I walked into my comrade's place of rest, sensing the pleasant, musty yet sweetness of fried plantains in this Cuban household, we had to ruin the environment with our odor. And his mother screamed, "Tu huele como un cadáver." And then we laughed together. Mother in oblivion, us in irony. Oh boy, if only she knew. This is Phil Lysecki, and this next poem I actually wrote in Duda's Introduction to Poetry class that I took at Triton College. And this is one of them that I turned in and I really liked. It's called Knife. Swish slash, I was taking a path. The shimmering shine presents my fresh wrath. My teeth grind juicy flesh until the ultimate bite. I'll be waiting in the kitchen or in a pitch black alley at night. She threw gravy at me and left me to dry. A dead knight in shining armor covered in flies. I'm in my shallow grave covered in porcelain sheets of white. I'm stuck in a cage of bone, but at least I won the fight. Crushed, dripping strawberries are flowing on the dance floor, saving sheepish soldiers as steel shards wash ashore. Deaths and last breaths are the things that I dread the most. So with this salted puss ocean, I'll massage your bread. Or do you prefer toast?
Thank you. Hello, my name is Adela Babkanova, and this is Darkness. Days are cold, cold as life. Death awaits, death approaches. It will be dark, but don't be afraid. Follow your heart. Your heart is the light. You will be strong. Leaves are rustling, wind is blowing. The chill has come. Snowflakes fall. Don't be afraid. Death has come. Hi, my name is Adela Babkanova, and this is Till the End of Time. The world has a limit of time. That limit can't be broken, not by anyone, not by anything. The limit still continues, till the end of time. Many have tried, many have failed, to break the rule of time. Time cannot be stopped, but it can be forgotten. It's an illusion, illusion to the mind. The mind can be poisoned, poisoned by thoughts, poisoned by feelings. That's why we suffer till the end of time.
Phil Lysecki, this is called The Gutter. I hate myself and I want to die. I'm in a world of shit that I cannot escape. I can't change anything about myself to make my life better. I have no control over who I am and who I can be. I have completely lost my identity. My priorities do not matter. I brush off of all my needs and wants to the side because I am not important. I am the scum at my job. I am the virus in my family. I am the infection to my friends. And yet, I am my own garbage. I've lost all joy and interest in life. My needs and wants do not matter anymore. My dreams are a comedy, while my life is a horror. My emotions are a corny chick flick, while my own death will be a romance. When a man goes through life with no education or friends, the only thing left to gain is wisdom. Once these experiences become boring, repetitive, and lame, then the clock strikes. It's time to go. I hear the ticking each day and the talking each night. When I wake up, I'm really sleeping in a nightmare that I can't escape from. Everywhere I go, shows, movies, dinners, the Grim Reaper is lurking over me, discussing with me my impressive progression into the underworld. I'm walking through a minefield of dreams, ready to tear this nightmare into pieces. Click. Boom.
Last night, where's my shirt?
Well, that about wraps up our second show, PMS 2011, Poetry Music Scene, Poetry Music Show. And we started off in February because we were delayed from January, and now it is March. But please excuse the effort of a one-man show. So I just hope you guys enjoyed it, and I'll see you next time.
Roscoe Roscoe it's you.
I am nothing but a human being. I'm fed up with my fucking life. If you don't like me, suck my fucking... Fucking bitch, yeah! Fucking bitch. Roscoe. I'm the man! I'm the asshole.
I hate fucking Tom Fable. He's a fucking silent critic. I hate Tom Fable. Asshole. Fuck yeah, oh, I fail myself.
Roscoe. All fucking week. Yeah.
Thank you very much. Yeah. Thank you very much, bitches. I appreciate everything.